The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see? Pick up the mirror now, America. Go ahead, pick it up. What are you, afraid? It's just a mirror, America. What could it do to you except reflect your image? The Majority Report.
All right, it is Thursday, December 16th, 2010. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, if not though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Welcome. It's cold out.
Yeah.
It's too cold. I think we finally hit that season where it's depressing. It's depressing. The good news is, though, I've got this going. And so
wait a sec.
Here we go. I've got it plugged in. There you go. When we need. All right. So I'll just. It's either this or some type of like Lexapro or something for me, I think, these days. There we go. Great show for you today. On the program, we're going to be welcoming Allison Kilkenny and Jamie Kilstein of WeAreCitizenRadio.com. Their names are so similar, the last names.
Both so violent, too.
Kill and kill. There you go. They'll be joining us on the program, and we will get right into it. One thing I just wanted to note. Someone sent me this that on their Facebook page, Ring of Fire. Do not miss this weekend's show. Bobby List, this is on the Ring of Fire wall. Do not, everyone knows what Ring of Fire radio is, I presume. Longtime show on Air America Radio. Was on, I think, for, gosh, probably 95% of the time that Air America was on. Maybe it started shortly after we launched. With, of course, Bobby Kennedy and Mike Papantonio, and at different times there's been a third person, most recently David Bender. And apparently David Bender is leaving the show. Ring of Fire on their Facebook. Do not miss this weekend's show. Bobby lists his top five progressive talk radio hosts. One of them might just be joining the Ring of Fire. I got to switch my bag. That was a compressor, incidentally. That's the Perry Mason sound. That's the sound of intrigue. So head over to the Ring of Fire Facebook. Let's see. One person said me, but they misspelled my name. So head over to the Ring of Fire Facebook if you have a Facebook. If you're a Facebooker, I'm not a huge Facebook guy. More Twitter. Let's jump right in. Don't Ask, Don't Tell moved through the House yesterday. And the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And it supposedly, I don't have the document now in front of me. Here it is. Supposedly getting closer in the Senate. You know, I don't want to get anybody's hopes up. But supposedly, Olympia Snow from Maine has now committed to voting for repeal after she voted no last week over what she said were procedural issues. If Snow keeps her commitment, according to David Kurtz at the Talking Points memo, it gives Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal 59 of 60 votes needed to get past a Republican filibuster. Senators Scott Brown and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska are the key uncommitted senators at this point. I would be very surprised if Scott Brown would join the filibuster and vote against this. Though, one doesn't know. I mean, this is one of those occasions where, and I've been saying for a couple of weeks, I'm not voting for the filibuster. The filibuster, you know, they don't need him for the filibuster. Understand this. They just need him to break the filibuster. Filibuster can take place with one person. They need 60 votes in the affirmative. And if he's at the dentist, say, on the day that they're voting, or like, oh, man, really? Because it's a big tradition for my family to skirt difficult votes. That one would be difficult for me because I'm the senator from Massachusetts, but at the same time, I want people to still feel like I was the conservative darling. And so it's a tradition for my members of my family to have a dentist appointment on those days. And family is very important to me. So I would never break that family tradition. So who knows, but that's the report. And I'm not going to get into it today, but I do want to mention it. The Justice Department on Wednesday sued BP and several other companies involved in the Gulf oil spill, an opening salvo in the government's efforts to get billions of dollars for untold economic and environmental damage. So that $27 billion up front apparently didn't cover it. Now, just coincidentally, I mean, just totally coincidentally, I mean, shockingly coincidentally, it must be a total coincidence, because we all know how these this huge, massive cable dump by WikiLeaks, which turns out actually not to be a dump at all. They've released, I don't know, several hundred specific cables. They have something like 250,000, but they've only released like 400 after a serious vetting from multiple news sites. And of course, it must be just a total coincidence, as reported. And, you know, you don't see these things reported in the American media anymore for some strange reason. The New York Times only reports without a shred of irony on their Twitter feed that the U.S. is looking to the Department of Justice supposedly trying to figure out how to charge WikiLeaks with conspiracy. I got news for the New York Times. And in fact, open a window. Maybe I could just yell this to them. guess who else was involved in the conspiracy? I will say this again because I can't say it enough. I never read a single cable on WikiLeaks. I read them in the New York Times. I read them in the Washington Post. I read them in El País with the help of Google Translate. And in The Guardian UK. So who else is involved in that conspiracy? New York Times. But they don't seem to be, I don't know. Maybe they're still releasing some of these cables. I'm not sure. But The Guardian UK is. And apparently, just coincidentally, the U.S. finally gets around to suing BP. Just as the release of these cables showing a striking resemblance between BP's Gulf of Mexico disaster and a little reported giant gas leak in Azerbaijan experienced by BP 18 months before the Gulf of Mexico disaster. And this has emerged from leaked U.S. embassy cables. Cables reveal that some of BP's that must be embarrassing for the U.S. government to have clearly been reported, to clearly have notice that BP is, boy, they're just not very good at what they're doing, apparently. The cables reveal that some of BP's partners in the gas field were upset that the company was so secretive about the incident that it even allegedly withheld information from them. Gosh, you know, if I had that information and then BP was to have blown up an oil rig in the Gulf of Mexico, I don't think I would trust them to handle the situation or to tell me what was going on. They also say that BP was lucky it was able to evacuate its 212 workers safely after the incident, which resulted in two fields being shut and output being cut by at least 500,000 barrels a day. Other cables leaked claim the president of Azerbaijan accused BP of stealing $10 billion of oil from his country and using mild blackmail to secure the rights to develop vast gas reserves in the Caspian Sea. Now, isn't the president of Azerbaijan, isn't he like some horrible, horrible... Do I have this right, or am I mixing up with another country there? One of those, maybe it was Tajikistan, where the head of this country is a horrible, horrible dictator, and gained a little bit of credibility because Bill Clinton went and visited him for something like $10 million. I don't know. If I'm confusing the two, please forgive me. It's either that Azerbaijan was where Borat came from. Kazakhstan. Who is the leader of the Azerbaijan? Is it Tajikistan or Azerbaijan? I'm not sure. So please strike that from the record. And another thing, we know not the part about Borat. And then also leaked in the cables, American energy firm Chevron in discussions with Tehran about developing an Iran-Iraq cross-border oil field despite U.S. sanctions against Iran. Gosh. It's just, I'm sorry, folks. You can't tell me that there's no value in those WikiLeaks. You just can't. You can't.
President of Azerbaijan did win with 87.34% of the vote, so that's a little suspect.
Very popular guy. Did he meet with Clinton? Because the guy who met with Clinton, I know, is a real incredible, sort of almost impossible to imagine scumbag.
Does not say. Can't find that.
Bill Clinton travels to meet a dictator in Google. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to send you to a Google course. Kid grows up on computers, can put together a car, doesn't know how to work Google.
There are no screws to turn, you know.
This is an enjoyable story. And we will call the guests after this, gentlemen. You're on notice. There apparently was, and I haven't seen much reported on this, but a financial panel, a blue ribbon financial panel, put together to determine the cause of the financial crisis. Now, listen, I'm going to tell you right now. It's 11:42. At 12:15 today, and after the show, we're going to do a random Rush, Dorsey, because I'm convinced Rush Limbaugh is going to be talking about this commission's report, which proves that Fannie Mae and giving money to poor black people who didn't deserve it to buy houses is the cause of this financial meltdown. Now, you've heard this talking point in the past, and apparently the Republicans on this commission, the commission started out as being a bipartisan type of thing that everybody was all happy with themselves, and we're really going to get to the root of this. And, of course, in the run-up to the election, a couple of these Republicans were, you know, Wall Street's horrible. They're having, they're posturing. They're posturing for the committee hearings. Guys like Thomas. What's that? Bill Thomas. He's the chair of the House Ways and Means Committee. Well, I guess he's a former congressman, I should say, and chair of the House Ways and Means Committee. And, these guys might as well be Republican lawmakers when they're on air, because they're basically, but more importantly, they're more incentivized because they're in the Republican, the big board that will basically pay these. I mean, I don't know what Bill Thomas is doing right now, but I can assure you that one of the checks he receives every month from sitting on some board of directors or multiple checks that he received are from the conservative Borg. And apparently when they had the hearings, he was posturing quite a bit about, giving the Wall Streeters a tough time. Well, so the story goes that the commission is supposed to release its report January 15th. It is a bipartisan commission. But I think there are five Democrats, because it's been set up by the House, five Democrats, four Republicans, one independent. Phil Angelides, former treasurer of California, or still treasurer of California? You got to turn on your mic, buddy, when you speak. That's one of the key ingredients. I cannot hear him. Can you turn him up?
Phil Angelides.
Yeah. Okay. That's there you. Got to jiggle that. Jiggle that wire. We got to get some new cables soon. Soon. So Phil Angelides, fairly tough guy. So. So the Republicans have decided to release their own report. Instead of a report from the commission, it's, I guess it would be entitled The Republicans, the four whiny-ass teeny baby Republicans sitting on this committee are going to release our own report. They released it supposedly, I think, yesterday, a month, 3 weeks before the real report that's going to come out. You notice Republicans do this a lot lately, or foes of, I mean, whoever it is. And this is actually pretty amazing. Their report, of course, is going to come out, and it's going to claim that the federal government was involved in pushing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Look, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are sponsored by the government, but they are a completely private enterprise in terms of what they do. All they do is they get some loan guarantees from the U.S. government. Now, it is true that George Bush, when he was pushing his ownership society, remember that meme? Ownership society. Everybody's going to be an owner of something. That means we're going to have a society of owners instead of a society of non-owners. And they encourage Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to buy mortgages in the secondary mortgage market. That part is a fact. What is not a fact is that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were involved in owning their own derivatives, like every other entity out there buying mortgages. Now, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac own a lot more mortgages now because that was part of the bailout. Right now, they own about 60% of the mortgages, I think, in the country as part of the bailout because they took all the garbage that other banks had, which in and of itself is proof that they were not driving this market. The other lie that they like to push is a focus on the CRA, which is the Community Reinvestment Act, which basically says that banks can no longer redline. You can't say, I'm not going to loan money to black people just because they're black. That's from 1977. The number of foreclosures and some prime loans that came from banks who were obligated by the Community Reinvestment Act is something under the 15 to 10%. So they simply aren't big players in this whole escapade. This is all about derivatives. It was all about the leveraging multiple times over of mortgages. It was all about the reselling of mortgages and detaching the actual people who made the loans to the people who bought these things over and over and over and over again. Just kept leveraging and leveraging and leveraging. It's basically like placing a bet with your bookie and then using that bet with your bookie as a means in which to get credit to place another bet. And then some of these loans started to fail. The value of houses didn't go up. The whole thing just tumbled and crashed. But they're going to push that because that's what Rush Limbaugh has told them to push. And I'm being only 1/8 facetious in saying that. And so they're going to write up their mythical, fictional report and put it out there. Now, this is what's also astonishing. Just to give you a sense of just how intellectually corrupt and bankrupt these people are. And just how much they are essentially, let me put this gently, taking a shit on the heads of all their Tea Partiers. I mean, if you're a Tea Partier and you subscribe and you voted for a Republican, understand what a dupe you are. You're a dupe because the way you the person who paid for your bus going to whatever rally you went to was the Koch brothers through Americans for Prosperity or some other right-wing billionaire who has duped you into thinking that what you're involved in is some type of like government fiscal responsibility and, you know, fairness for the people and freedom. That's when you first got duped. And then when you voted for a Republican, you got duped again. So God bless you. Aside for you, those of you in the Tea Party movement who are racist and think that, you know, Obama's a Muslim, I know there are some out there who are not. You're just a sucker. I'm not being mean to you. I'm trying to give you a heads up. I'm basically saying to you, heads up. That 2x4, it's about an inch away from your head. And it's moving and not away from you. During a private commission meeting last week, all four Republicans voted in favor of banning the phrases. Now, they're creating their own report, their own fictional report. They all voted in favor of banning the phrases. I'm sorry. This is why they're creating their own report. Because during the meetings with the Democrats and the Independent, they all voted and presumably brought up the motion in favor of banning the phrases. Are you ready for this? This is a financial report on the meltdown, a financial meltdown that we had in 2008. The phrases, Wall Street, from the report. The phrases shadow banking from the report. The words interconnection and deregulation from the report.
What?
This is so incomprehensible. I really don't even know how to express this. How do you write a report about the financial meltdown without the words Wall Street, interconnection, deregulation, and shadow banking? And just so you know, I mean, I think everybody understands what the words Wall Street mean. I mean, can you even talk about this without the words Wall Street? And I'm pretty sure everybody understands how deregulation played into this. Even your right-wing fanatics will talk about the Glass-Steagall Act. Now, of course, they don't make the connection to, hey, wait, Phil Graham. The Glass-Steagall Act was repealed not by something called Repeal Glass-Steagall. It was repealed by a bill with Phil Graham's name in it and some other Republican. I can't remember who it was. Now, of course, it was signed by Bill Clinton on the behest of Robert Rubin. Just so that you have no doubt that they're all in bed together with this. But shadow banking refers to the system of the financial system in which investors and other non-banks like hedge funds and investment firms provide credit to borrowers. This is not interterrestrial stuff. It simply means that it's a deregulated portion of our the banking that goes on in this country. Interconnection specifically refers to the links between financial institutions to one another, like derivatives, borrowings, and investments. And these people voted to have these words struck. I don't know that you could get more bizarre or craven if you said, we're going to, listen, a, and, the, but, and any ing or er word. Yep. And also, anytime you have a word that starts with the letter B, must be an icon. Brooksley Bourne, she's one of the people theoretically. On the Democrat side. Brooksley. I think a number of us had really pulled for bipartisan consensus, she said. But this action by the Republicans indicate they have decided to go their own way. Yeah, it does. That's a strong indication. I certainly felt, and I think the majority of the commission felt, that deleting those phrases would impair the commissioner's ability to give full and fair, understandable report to the American people about the causes of the financial crisis.
Hey, what happened?
It's certainly, it's hard to imagine Wall Street wasn't involved. This is where I need like a ba-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. Will you find that, please, for my 360?
On it.
Yeah, I will say. Boren said that Republicans wanted to ban two other phrases. Quote, of the same ilk. Okay, it wasn't of the same ilk. Of the same ilk. Presumably that would be, you know, like the words money and maybe derivatives. The only words we're going to allow on this is Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and black people. That's the only words we want in the entire report. Thomas, the former Ways and Means Republican, displayed populist outrage during the public forums at the excessive compensation paid to top bankers.
Surprise, surprise.
And this same piece says economists from the Federal Reserve, as well as bank regulators first appointed by Republicans, agree that the Community Reinvestment Act played virtually no role in causing the financial crisis. All right. We'll be back in a minute. When we come back, we'll be talking to, Jamie and Allison from Citizens Radio.
I'll be here till the end of time. So you've got to let me know, should I stay or should I go? It's always tease, tease, tease. You're happy when I'm on my knees. One day it's fine and next it's black. So if you want me off your back, well come on and let me know, should I stay or should I go? Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? If I go, there will be trouble. And if I stay, it will be double.
What are we on?
So come on and let me know.
We are such a, it's unbelievable. We are such a fine-tuned machine here. Dude, you know, I could, it's clear to me you never did any bar mitzvah DJing when you were, are we ready, Dorsey?
Almost there.
Almost there. All right, we'll bring on our guests in just a moment because we're waiting on Dorsey. Because all roads lead to Dorsey. You can't record simultaneously? What do you mean?
No.
Well, are we there? Are you going to use two computers? No.
We're there. I'm using both.
We ready?
Jeez.
All right. I would like to welcome to the show Allison Kilkenny and Jamie Kilstein of Citizens Radio. You can check out their podcast at wearecitizenradio.com. Guys, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you.
Hey, Sam. How are you? As much as we do want to talk about Citizen Radio, we can talk about it. Just don't use the word citizen or radio.
There you- Exactly. Exactly. Yes, that's the we'll speak in code. I mean, we're just going to do this entire interview with emoticons.
Yeah, I'll bust out my sidekick. I'm pretty excited about it.
Have you guys seen much reported on that at all? I mean, I guarantee you that Rush Limbaugh is talking about this Republican report today as if it's the entire report. He's talking about how black people caused the entire meltdown, and there doesn't seem to be much conversation about this. I didn't even know this panel existed.
No, I mean...
No idea.
I literally, we just heard about it on your show for the first time.
Yeah, though to be fair, Rush talks about how black people are screwing us all over every day. He really doesn't need motivation to do that.
That's true. It's wrong of me to impart that level of sense, I guess, to him. So, guys, wait. Now, I don't know. Tell us a little bit about your show. How long... Because you guys used to be streaming... used to be doing, was it a podcast? It was a live show on like some type of online network. Just tell Tell us about your show.
Sure.
Yeah, we used to be on another website, and we recently just went independent, so we're on our own now.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much what happened when we first started the show, you know, when Allison and I first met, she was a writer, and she was just doing stuff for, like, HuffPost, and I was a comedian, and, you know, neither of us were too excited about it, and I had one of those, I mean...
You guys weren't excited about meeting each other.
Yeah, it was really...
I was very indifferent. I was like, all right, I guess we're doing this.
Yeah, and she was. And I had one of those, like, managers who was... He would have, like, these decent ideas sometimes, but he had no way to pull it off. So, like, I remember one day he was like, you guys should do a radio show. And we were like, how do you do that? And he's like, I don't fucking know. And, like, he had no idea. And so we just started Googling, and there was, like, there was this weird... there's this website called Blog Talk Radio. And
sure.
what Blog Talk Radio is essentially you do a radio show on your cell phone.
Yeah, and it's a really neat idea, in theory, because anybody can do a radio show, but the sound quality is awful.
Tell me about it.
Oh, so bad. And yeah. Our first guest was Ralph Nader, and, you know, Ralph assumed he was calling into this, like, professional station, but I actually had to, if Allison and I were near each other with the cell phones, there would be this, like, intense kind of Armageddon-esque feedback. So what would happen was, so I literally interviewed Ralph Nader from, like, our bathtub. We were borderline homeless. We were living in, like, this, like, tiny slum. Nader called in, and I remember, like, you know, I'd be in the bathroom, Allison was in the kitchen, then anytime he would say something cool, I would, like, run out of the bathroom, like, give Allison the thumbs up. You just hear, like, massive feedback. Allison would be like, get the fuck back in the bathroom. I'd run back in the bathroom, and Nader would just keep talking throughout the whole thing, and then we just built an audience somehow to the point where, like, we could go independent. I mean, what we try to do on the show, I don't know, like, we were skeptical of doing a political comedy show because when it comes to that, so many other people do such great jobs, whether it's The Daily Show or whatever. So we figured instead of using comedy to make fun of the news, we would much rather use comedy as sort of a conduit to deliver the news and deliver more stories that you would hear on, like, your show or Democracy Now.
Yeah, and we're kind of like a 101 class for people who perhaps don't know that much about politics. Like, they're pissed off, they know something's wrong, so we try to be that introductory, you know, show to get people interested.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, like, I dropped out of high school, and when I first knew I wanted to be political, I was like, all right, so I'm clearly left-wing, so I'll just start reading Noam Chomsky and learning about the uprising in East Timor. And I tried, and I just felt stupid. I was like, there was so much that I didn't know was going on before, and it was, like, really, really overwhelming. So, you know, what we try to do on the show is just...
Well, just by mentioning East Timor, you know more than most people,
right?
Frankly. I mean...
I heard that East Timor person's a dick.
Right. Well, you know, just, I mean, for those that don't know, Henry Kissinger was heavily involved in sort of encouraging... Well, I don't know if encouraging is the right word, but basically saying, it's probably not a humanitarian concern.
Yeah, and actually, Richard Holbrooke as well. You know, on the Twitter the other day, I saw a lot of liberals really, you know, bemoaning the fact that he had died and sort of glorifying him after his death. But yes, let's not forget that he helped facilitate the terrible stuff that happened in East Timor.
Stop speaking of the dead like that.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, that's classic. That, I mean, that is sort of classic that the people get lionized. As long as if they make it to a certain age in this country and they have a certain status within the establishment, they're automatically lionized. That's part that's one of the parting gifts.
Totally. When Dick Cheney dies, it's going to be like, remember when he shot Osama bin Laden in the woods? It's like, no, that was his friend.
Right. Exactly. Now, so you guys are you podcast and you do the show now two or three times a week, but you're threatening to do 5 days a week. Is that right?
We are threatening everyone. Yes. Correct.
Yeah, we do it. We do it 3 days a week right now. I mean, essentially what happened. Oh, so once we left Blog Talk, we went to a station that actually paid us to do our work. And we.
I've been in those situations. It's very awkward.
It's very bizarre. They give you money and you feel like you should just, like, jump out the window like you just robbed them. But, you know, we got into this situation, and I actually want to – I can thank you, you know, to your audience now, even though I thanked you in person. But we got into this situation where, you know, we had a really big audience. And what was so cool is it was hard to find our show. Nobody found Citizen Radio by accident. Like, the way the website was designed, you had to click through, like, 20 pages before you found Citizen Radio. So our fans are super loyal because, you know, they found us because, like, a friend of theirs, like, burned them a CD and handed it to them or forced them to listen to it. And, you know, what happened was the station we were on actually started to take off. And the comedian inside of me, whenever something starts to go good, I'm just like, I gotta get the fuck out of here or screw this up somehow.
I've experienced that a little bit.
Yeah. And we, you know, essentially they were getting big to the point where they were taking on advertisers that we didn't like. So, you know, it was definitely this like put up or shut up moment where we talk a lot about what people can actually do and, you know, how you should like watch where you shop and, you know, who, whatever. So the last thing we wanted to be was, you know, Citizen Radio brought to you by Bechtel or something. I mean, it wasn't that bad, but it was like Nike and AT&T.
Right. So we told our audience, you know, we're going independent and it's up to you guys to prove that socialism can work.
Yes.
Because if you guys don't donate to our show, we will go under.
Yeah, well, and the socialism aspect comes from, we didn't want to take away from anyone who couldn't pay. So we're like, we're going to keep doing three shows a week. We're going to leave this station. If it doesn't work, it's over. Like, we got nothing. There's no way we can do it. And they really came through. And, you know, I mean, it's still, people are still coming through every day. And it's cool. And, oh, and so I called Sam, who I've never talked to in my life. You know, I texted Janine Garofalo, who I'm friends with, and I was like, what do I do? We're totally screwed. I'm going to be homeless. It was very dramatic. And she told me to call you. And I'm so used to comedians
right.
where I think I actually said this on Marin's podcast. The best way to describe comedians is like, hey, did you hear your best friend got Letterman? And it's like, he's not my best friend anymore.
Yeah. So Janine was
well,
like,
that's actually, Marin is one of the most apropos places to express that sentiment.
Right. So Janine was like, call Sam. And Jamie was like, you mean he won't destroy me?
Yeah.
And it was actually, it was the complete opposite. It was really nice just to have somebody be supportive. So thank you.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
well, my pleasure. I don't know that I had much wisdom to impart, to be honest, but.
No, you totally did. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, you really, really did. And it was one of those moments where I was like, you know, you hear so much about liberals being always angry at each other. And it was this cool thing because me and you, you know, or, you know, the three of us, not only do we believe in the same things for the most part, but we're also technically competition where it's like we both podcast. People don't have enough money to maybe give money to all the podcasts they want to. But it was just more important to you, as it really is to Allison and I, just to get this medium as far as we can get it. Because once this medium becomes viable, you know, it's going to be really important politically. But then we can also compete with all those douchebags you see on TV 24 hours a day.
Right, exactly. And you know, frankly, you know, when Air America was first launched, there was, you know, a sort of parallel track of liberal talkers who were on what was then Jones Radio. And my sense was always that the best case scenario, I mean, for every not just for everybody, but I mean, in terms of the medium itself and for us at Air America, is that there's two liberal talk radio stations in every market, because that's the way you build an industry, is you actually need competitors in some way to build this thing. And so, you know, there's a lot of hours in the day. In some respects, you know, we're competing with Marin's podcast and with other podcasts that I don't listen to. But
I was under the impression we were all trying to take down Marin's podcast.
I'm definitely doing that. Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong at all. But I invite people to check it out. I've listened to your show. I enjoy it. It's very funny, and it's you know, there's and also there's a lot of obviously you guys cover a lot of great stories. Allison, you got a great blog. I can't. Jamie, it seems like you're taking a little vacation for your blog, buddy. I mean, you're laying Allison doing most of the work.
I know. Every time my manager is like, "You got to do it," and I'm like, "I'm going to do it." And then, well, I just
dude, your manager is not in charge of you.
I know.
He doesn't own you.
I just, I tour so much with stand-up, and I'm so committed to Citizen Radio. I'm sorry, everybody. another thing that I guess since we have this forum, not to be all pluggy and gross, but another thing that we really do try to do on the show that we don't hear that much from, you know, we got really upset, and lots of people got mad at us, but we got really upset with the Rally for Sanity, with the whole Jon Stewart thing, because, you know, Jon Stewart's been such an important voice, whether he likes it or not, to get these young progressives energized. And he finally had this amazing opportunity where all those kids came to see him, and he did nothing with it. I mean, when Kid Rock came out and did, like, his anthem, which was literally like, we don't need to do anything. Why bother? War's bad. Like, it was so fucking upsetting. Like, it was so upsetting. Like, that would be – and the same place where, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. gave his speech. Like, if he was like, I have a dream, you know what? It'll be fine.
Yeah, and I mean, in his defense, though, it is, that's the danger in looking to a comedian to be your political leader. So I think it just said a lot about the left in general, that everybody was like, oh no, our great leader, the comedian, has failed us.
Right. So one of the things we really do try to do on the show is not only, like, we'll call ourselves out, like when we were lazy or when we were apathetic, or, you know, we used to talk about how we used to be train wrecks, and... You know, we really do encourage people to actually do stuff, to actually, you know, we had a contest to see who would, you know, who could do the most, like, phone banking for Russ Feingold, and, or, you know, and we encourage people to, like, look at what they eat, and, you know, Allison and I are both vegans, or to go march, or go organize, and it's really great. Like, we just started a forum on our website where, like, it's pretty much just, like, land of the outcasts, and they're all finding each other, which is amazing, and all these people are talking about how, like, they never thought about being a vegetarian. They never thought about marching. They never, you know, liberals are really good about going out to the bar.
It's just really exciting, too. Sorry to jump in, but to see, like, young kids in London inspiring young kids in America to go protest.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's really neat to just see young progressives getting excited about being engaged citizens.
Right, because I mean, now that your audience likes me, not to make them not like me, but I think one of the biggest problems with the one of the biggest problems with the left is we'll go out to the bar with all of our, like, super intelligent friends. We'll, you know, talk about Matt Taibbi's new piece. We'll be drinking our corporate beer, smoking our corporate cigarette, eating our factory farm steak, and then be like, where are the corporations getting all this fucking money from? And then we get too drunk to remember the plan we even made the night before, and no one actually does something. And I think that, you know, our party, what we have on our side, we have facts. We have compassion, we have empathy, we have science, and the right doesn't do that. But what the right does do is they organize, and they have pamphlet-making skills and markers to make signs, and they get out there, and they're just really loud about it. And
well, one of the things that I think is, you know, sort of been sort of bedeviling me on some level is that it's – I mean, what you're saying is true, and I think to a certain extent, it, you know, I haven't been to a bar, and I can't tell you how long. Frankly, because your life basically ends when you have a child, and they won't tell you that. But you guys don't obviously know that. But I mean, that's a little clue, just in case you were ever wondering. But and the fact of the matter is that at this point, you know, and I mean, I know you must share this frustration with Democrats, but we're really at a stage. I mean, do you guys have a sense? Let me ask you this, because you're younger, you're more hopeful. You're in many respects, you know, your lives are more focused in that regard.
Is this just because we don't have a kid?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Believe me, all this goes away, and then it's just about Super Y, which is a perfect, actually, it works both literally and metaphorically once you have a kid, Super Y. But this sense, I mean, I have a real sense that it's become really clear that at least the thrust, the direction of the Democratic Party, maybe not necessarily all Democrats, maybe not even a majority of elected Democrats, but the thrust of the party is dominated in many respects by the same corporate interests as are completely woven into the fabric of the Republican Party.
Yeah, absolutely. We talk about that all the time on our show. And, you know, we have a lot of Ralph Nader supporters that listen to Citizen Radio. But it's become pretty clear that on a national level, a third party candidate just is not a viable option right now until we have campaign finance reform. So what we actually encourage our listeners to do is support progressive candidates within the Democratic Party that run to the left of the moderate Democrats who have betrayed us time and time again.
Well, and you wrote that great article recently talking about the whole myth of like the pussified Democrats.
Yeah, it's not that they're pussies. It's what you said, Sam, which is they are loyal to corporate interests. So they're extremely aggressive when it comes time to stealing grandma's Social Security, but they're pussies when it comes time to defend the poor.
Yeah, they're always like, oh, the Democrats are so weak, they're such pussies. Like, no, they're very brave at fucking over poor people.
Right.
They do that with all the might and gusto they can muster.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, that's one of the things I think is becoming even clearer for people, that it's less about political strategy and tactics, and it's more about an agenda that is missing.
Yeah, well Sam, what do you think? And we'll ask you this, Sam, you're also doing, we have a live show.
Oh, yes, right. We should talk about that.
Yeah, well, we're doing the Citizen Radio Live. We do it once a month at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in New York. And this month we have Sam and Michael Ian Black from The State and Mike Kaplan, who's this really great political comic, and Adam Green and Jack Dischel from The Moldy Peaches are going to play music. And it's just really cool thing. Like, it's just like a bunch of young kids who get together in this basement.
Is this like the all-Jew,
We like to have themes.
Let's see if we can get Michael Ian Black to bring his pair of black glasses, and then no one will be distinguishable on stage.
That is true. I remember the first show we did. It's this really great combination of Jews and Jews. It's this really great combination of political people and comedy kids. Like, the first show we did, like, Amy Goodman came to sit in the audience, which was like the most terrifying thing, because Allison and I had like dick jokes up front. But it was this awesome combination where, you know, Scahill and Taibbi did it, and it was the first time they ever met, and so they were the political guests, and then Janine Garofalo was the comic, and the audience was like half comedy kids who went to see Janine, but when Jeremy started talking about Afghanistan, were riveted, just shut up, and were riveted. And then it was all these political people like Amy Goodman and the staff of Grit TV, and they were, you know, laughing at all the really immature jokes. So it was this great combination. So the one that we're doing is next Monday, so it's December 20th with Sam and everybody. And I want to ask you this on the show, but I'm curious now too.
Good, I can practice.
Yeah, exactly. Because you're really like, you're a pragmatic. You're very to the left, but I think you think about things and you don't really react over emotionally. What do you?
I am actually not capable of having normal human emotions. That's actually
so in your robot theory, what do you think we do? Because, you know, you bring up Ralph Nader and people just lose their goddamn minds. But, and you have to admit this honestly, and like Allison said, it's not possible. We get that. So before anyone gets mad, we get it. But if you looked at what Ralph Nader was campaigning on compared to what Al Gore was running on, compared to what even Barack Obama was running on, the majority of your listeners, I would bet, agree with Ralph Nader. So if that's not going to work, and then if you have the DNC backing the more blue dog Democrats against people like Alan Grayson, against people like Russ Feingold, you know, what do we really do to combat it? You know what I mean? I mean, how much pressure can we put? How many phone calls can we give to Barack Obama? You know, what's going to compete with these corporate interests?
You know, that's actually, I mean, that's what I'm struggling with. I mean, you know, I don't have a quick answer for that. I mean, I don't have a quick answer for it. I mean, it's a question I've been asking of a lot of my guests, and it's a question that I'm struggling with a little bit, and I'm not sure if it's just go build a bunker or what. I mean, I think
before anybody does anything drastic like kill themselves, to make you both feel better.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
But maybe just go into a Florida school board meeting.
No, let's not get crazy. I think what we're all doing is really important. I think alternative media is a huge piece of the puzzle. I'm not saying it's the full answer, but I think the more we have this conversation and the more people, you know, sitting out there in the middle of nowhere hear stuff like this and think, oh, I'm not crazy to support Ralph Nader. I'm not crazy to think both parties are influenced by huge corporate interests. I think that dialogue is an important first step to have.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I think that there's a difference between agreeing with Ralph Nader and supporting and supporting him in the context as a voice out there and supporting his running. Now, you know, in 2000, I voted for Nader, but I did that as someone from New York, and I actually there was an online vote swap site where you could actually, you know, say like I'm gonna vote for Nader in New York if you vote for Gore in Florida, right. And you know, I don't Al Gore won. You know, he won by 500,000 votes, and he would have won if there was a Supreme Court that took its job seriously.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Ralph Nader is not the reason that Al Gore did not win. And
absolutely,
you know, I was not a huge fan of Clinton's contemporaneously the day that he was elected, and since. And you know, with that said, there is a certain amount. You're not going to get everything as long as there's a certain flow that's heading in a more positive direction, from my perspective.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's another problem. I have this kind of Nader theory. Whenever I use the word theory, it makes me sound like a truther. I have this kind of theory where, like, people want easy scapegoats. And, you know, I think one of the things we talk about so much on Citizen Radio is just how you have to work. You have to kind of put your money where your mouth is. Because with the Ralph Nader thing, how easy, and I'm so glad you said that it's like, even if you know, that he did not cost Gore that election. Because it's so much easier to, like, what's easier, for example, to say, oh my God, our whole voting system's corrupt, the Supreme Court's corrupt, we need to fix our entire electoral process, or I'm going to go after the old guy with the wonky eye who wants to pull out of Afghanistan. Well, that's easy because he's an easy target. Much like the Republicans, right. It's just easier to say it was the Mexicans. It was easier to say it was the gays, et cetera. You know, before we got such a following by a bunch of like vegetarians and vegans, we had a hard time anytime we'd mention being vegetarian because, you know, it's easy to protest the war. How do you protest the war? Well, you don't go over and get shot in the face. That's awesome. How do you protest gay marriage? You know, I can be a gay rights advocate. I don't have to marry a dude. That's easy. But then the second we were like, hey, maybe you shouldn't eat that factory farm steak because that contributes to global warming. People are like, don't tell me what to do. Right. And I think that we just need to be more active. I mean, that's another thing that bothers me about The Daily Show. Don't mock protesters. Don't mock the woman whose kid died in Iraq and now is going to handcuff herself to the White House because she doesn't know what else to do.
Right. No, I agree with that. And I think, you know, look, I mean, I have issues with Nader, but Nader is sort of is secondary. It's much easier to deal with the idea that Nader cost Gore votes in Palm Beach than it is that, oh, the Supreme Court, which is supposed to be above partisan politics, is completely corrupt and the foundations of our society are not really what we thought they were.
Right,
I mean, yes,
right.
It's much easier to deal with that. I mean, and I don't know what the solution is. I do think that it's going to deal with some type of campaign finance reform, but I don't know how that's even possible in this environment.
Right.
And so, you know, my fear is we got to wrap it up. And I'll give you guys just one more whack at the pinata, as it were. But my genuine fear is that we're going to have to get to a point that things get significantly more ugly. And
yeah.
I don't mean just in terms of like another 10 years of Bush. I mean where people actually become fed up across different political lines. But, you know, 2 years is a long time. And I'm shocked that we are where we are today if you had asked me this 2 years ago.
Right.
I mean, frankly,
yeah.
I'm shocked. But at the same time, it's also hard to know that you have a clear perspective. There are people out in California who are convinced that the Republican Party is so bereft there, so malfunctioning in California. They believe it's going to spread across the country. I mean, because you had somebody, you know, Carly Fiorina, who spent, I don't know what, 60, 70 million. I mean, how many millions of her own money?
All of the millions.
And could not even get elected there.
Right.
Republicans lost so badly in California. Now, there's some who theorize that this is what we're going to see in the future. And, you know, I can make an argument here that the Republican Party is about to fracture along three or four different lines. and it's going to leave them completely dysfunctional. And then the debate is going to be between progressives within the Democratic Party and corporatists in the Democratic Party. Or I can just as easily make the argument that, yeah, the Republican Party may fuck up, but there's not going to be any debate between anybody in the Democratic Party. It's going to continue on like it is now. So it's really hard to know what to do. But I think, you know, one of the things I do appreciate about what you guys do is that you guys walk the walk. And I know that at the end of the day, that is a plus. That is a net plus as opposed to a net negative.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, man. And, you know, if anyone does want to check out the show or the forum, I mean, the forum is literally becoming a hub for every outcast liberal living, you know, in a conservative district, every gay, lesbian, queer, trans. Like, it's amazing how it's blown up. It's just been 3 days. So you can subscribe for free and check out the forum for free at wearecitizenradio.com and then hang out with all of us, including Sam, on Monday at the UCB Theater.
Yay.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Folks, it's wearecitizenradio.com. Wearecitizenradio.com. And, of course, you can follow Allison Kilkenny on Twitter and then separately Jamie Kilstein on Twitter.
That is true.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sam. You're awesome.
We'll come back a little long in that segment. We'll come back. And then eventually we'll leave again. But we'll be back in a minute. Folks, we're back. Got a couple more minutes here. I'm just going to briefly touch on this story because I got a bunch of stories I just want to briefly touch on to give you a heads up. But if you have yet to, we should put a link on the blog because I'm not going to get to it as much as I would like to. But Glenn Greenwald has this piece on the inhumane conditions of Bradley Manning's detention. Bradley Manning was the private who is, and I think we touched on it yesterday, but it bears repeating. He was the private who gave those documents on a thumb drive, I think it was, or a CD.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. To the WikiLeaks organization. And let me just read just a couple of quotes from the story, because it really is... It's very easy to dismiss this guy, and it certainly is easy to call for his punishment. And look, I think you take an oath. I can both at once support this type of act and also think it's punishable. You know, I mean, that is... You know, the I mean, this came up in the, you know, when I would have debates with people about torture. When somebody would say, like, there's a ticking time bomb and the president has a choice. He either tortures and saves all of New York City from this massive bomb that's ticking or not. What do you do? And obviously, you need to say something like, "Well, for the sake of the argument, because what you're describing is a completely impossible scenario that's never happened in any non-fictional context ever." I mean, it happens a lot on TV, but that's because it's TV. But if you take the next step and you say, "Okay, I will grant you, we can prove all of what you're saying. Your hypothetical is absolutely the case." That the president is aware, knows, whatever, has telekinesis, knows for a fact that this person they have in custody knows of a massive nuclear device that could blow up 10 million people in 30 minutes, or whatever it is, in 5 hours, whatever the scenario is. And all of this is perfectly knowable that it's true. My response would still be, torture should still be illegal. If the president believes and knows it to the point that he can actually, it's demonstrably true that if he doesn't torture this guy who's in front of him, maybe the president's the only guy around, and he happens to have a tooth extracting device or whatever it is, then the president's got to make his own decision at that point. And, I mean, if I was president in that situation, what I would do is I would torture, because I know this is demonstrably true, and then I would turn myself in for committing a crime of torture. The point being that there is such a thing as civil disobedience, and civil disobedience does involve going to jail. It is possible to commit a crime, but also to do something that is justifiable. But you do the crime, you got to do the time, as it were. And if you think that laws are unjust, well, then you fight the unjustness of that law. So it is quite possible to both feel that, in my estimation, that Bradley Manning may be, in some respects, what he did was both heroic and illegal, and that he can be celebrated as a hero and go to jail. It's possible to hold both those thoughts simultaneously. And frankly, I don't know enough beyond this story of Glenn Greenwald's to really make that determination on both accounts. But I think it's important that, you know, we make ourselves aware of who this kid is and why, how he's being treated. He's being held in solitary confinement, which any psychiatrist will tell you. Extended periods of solitary confinement is psychological torture. And essentially all torture is psychological at the end of the day. I mentioned yesterday, for 23 out of every 24 hours, every day, he is alone in his cell without a pillow or a sheet for his bed. And it's not like he's on suicide watch yet. He's barred from exercising and is under constant surveillance to enforce those restrictions. This is inside his cell. He is not allowed to exercise in his cell. Honestly, someone tell me, what is the justification? What is the rationale behind not letting a guy to do push-ups in his cell, but for to break him down physically and mentally? There is no other rationale behind it. I want to remind people, this guy did not kill anybody. He did not rape anybody. He did not steal people's pensions. He did not cause rolling blackouts in the deaths of old people in California. He did not cause a financial crisis worldwide that destroyed the pensions of untold seniors. To date, there's been no evidence that he caused the deaths or the harm of anyone with his leaks. Now, this doesn't mean he didn't break the law, but just compare and contrast. I mean, I think it's not really an argument as to whether or not the solitary confinement and the restrictions they place on him while he's in his cell are nothing but punitive. Now, I also want to remind you, he's not been convicted of anything. He's not been convicted of anything. Under the military, I guess they can put him in the brig for maybe as long as they want. But, I mean, it's clear this is pretty barbaric stuff. But without making the case that he's being tortured, essentially, for whatever reasons. What's interesting is why he did what he did. He's not a spy who gained any money off of this. He's not like those guys from AIPAC who had a political, you know, agenda or were being paid basically to have this political agenda. He's not like one of the FBI guys who got paid by the Russians to do. No. He described the incident in which he first made him seriously question the U.S. government. This is Glenn Greenwald writing. When he was instructed to work on the case of Iraqi, quote-unquote, insurgents who had been detained for distributing so-called, quote-unquote, insurgent literature. When Manning had it translated, it turned out to be nothing more than a scholarly critique against the Prime Minister Maliki. Okay, more or less what I do here on a daily basis, but without the scholarly part. And this is part of an interview he gave, I think, with Wired Magazine. I had an interpreter read it for me. This is his words. And when I found out that it was a benign political critique entitled, "Where Did the Money Go?" and following the corruption trail within the Prime Minister's cabinet, I immediately took that information and ran to the officer to explain what was going on. He didn't want to hear any of it. He told me to shut up and explain how we could assist the FPs. I guess that's the maybe that's the Iraqi police in finding more detainees. I had always questioned the things worked and investigated to find the truth. But that was a point where I was, quote unquote, part of something. Well, this is an entire quote, sorry. But that was a point where I was part of something. I was actively involved in something that I was completely against. He goes on to say, I mean, what if I were someone more malicious? I could have sold to Russia or China or made bank. Danger, Wired Magazine, why didn't you? Because it's public data. Danger, Wired Magazine, I mean the cables. He says, it belongs in the public domain. Information should be free. It belongs to the public domain because another state would have just taken advantage of the information. Try and get some edge. If it's out in the open, it should be a public good. I don't know, folks. Make up your own mind. Go read more about this. But and I read this not necessarily to do anything other than put you on notice that this kid's a human being, that he is being tortured by our government, arguably so. That, frankly, the corporate media doesn't even discuss this guy. And never mind the jihad they're against WikiLeaks. Got a couple other stories that can wait till tomorrow. Although one other thing I would tell you to look up, and I mentioned this briefly in the after show yesterday, that I had read something to this effect. Apparently, and this is going to be shocking to you because you have heard nothing about it, I'm sure. Nothing about it. Unless maybe if you're a Citizen Radio fan. I think they talked about it on their podcast yesterday. The biggest prisoner protests in the history of the United States have been taking place this week in Georgia. Maybe I'm not watching enough news. Is it...
No, I just saw this in one corner of the internet.
Davey D's Hip Hop Corner has been covering this and interviewing people. He's got a show called, I think it's Cell Block, or it's on Friday nights. You can see the podcast there. On December 9th, thousands of Georgia prisoners refused to work, stopped all other activities, and locked down in their cells in a peaceful protest for human rights. They're basically being used as slave labor. They're basically being used as slave labor. I'm sure this has been going on since, gosh, whenever that time was that we talk about at Passover every year, slave labor. You don't lose all your rights when you become a prisoner. But apparently one of the benefits is that you get to work for corporations for free. So understand how this works here. This is the game, folks. And we'll go into this more. There's so many topics I want to hit that we never have time for. And maybe I got to start recording secondary shows or something. I don't know. But the way this game works is corporate prisons. They come in, they build the prisons, they give money to politicians, they build the prisons, they corporatize the prisons, they encourage more prisoners because it's good for business, right? So they're actively lobbying for things like, hey, let's put everybody in jail if they see crack, you know, or let's put people in jail if they don't pay their debts, or whatever it is. You build the corporate prison. It's a massive, massive, massive industry in this country now, private prisons. And then you make money on the flip side. Well, no, this is wrong for me to say. But then you partner with other corporations to provide them free labor for absolutely no benefit to you.
Don't piss down my back and tell me it's raining.
You know what you should go see? It's almost like a the genteel version of this story is, of course, what was that? Shawshank Redemption. Remember how the warden was sending his labor out into the fields to work? And he'd get a pie, and in the pie there'd be, you know, $10,000. Now, I'm not suggesting that private corporations would take kickbacks in any way for lending out their prisoners to work on behalf of corporations doing corporate work for no money. I'm sure there's no benefit accrued from corporation to corporation. I'm sure that it would be impossible to track back corporation that runs the prison, corporation that's getting the benefit of the slave labor, and see that they have the same corporate parenthood. I'm sure that's not possible. All right, folks, I went long today. I'm sorry. I'm not apologizing to you. Maybe you're happy about it. I'm apologizing to podcast gods. I've got to be more disciplined. Stick around for the post-show show. You can IM me, and please become a member, and please buy some coffee. JustCoffee.coop. Are you kidding me? You can still probably get it in time for Christmas. I don't know about that for sure. I should double check on that. But after Christmas, you're going to want coffee. You're just going to want chocolate and hot chocolate and tea. JustCoffee.coop. Put in the coupon code MAJORITY. All right, see you tomorrow. My darling young one, here beside you right now, before our world so great grows cold and changes scene, and the nights get darker. Ba 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 ba. Welcome to the famous post-show. I'm going to sit down sometime this week. The problem is, like, you know, I don't, when you're in the middle, and both you guys obviously know this, I'm telling the audience, and the Sammy Cam, which is up, right, with sound? When you're in the, you know, we had about a week and a half, I would say, we had just like a week, maybe, to plan the launch of the show.
We had like 4 or 5 days.
Yeah, maybe It was like 3 or 4 days to before we actually went on air.
Yeah.
I couldn't.
Soft launch period.
Yeah, we had a soft launch period, which, of course, you know, we're doing a show anyways, even though it just basically was our way of saying, like, hey, if we're fucking up and the podcast isn't up, or you know, you can't hear sound out of one speaker, but we're still doing a show.
The only difference now is we don't have an excuse.
We never, right. Right. But we never had time to sit down and go, like, okay, how are we really going to structure this? And it would have been almost impossible, because without doing it, it's impossible to know, like, hey, it should be this long, or we should do that thing, or we need this and that. And I feel like we still haven't had time to sort of sit back and sort of look at the show as it is and absorb and see where it should go. Maybe we need to bring in a consultant. See if you can get Mark. All right, now moving to the IM. Nefer, morning, Sam Dorsey. I hope you get back in time. Doesn't look okay. It's so damn cold, my car won't start. It's 2007 Acura RDX FFs.
Okay, maybe she should block off the radiator a little bit so that it warms up the engine. You know, piece of cardboard in front of the grill or something? Might work.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Have you ever seen, like, the big trucks in the winter driving around? They've got something covering their grill. That's because the radiator is going to work too well in the cold and keep the engine from warming up.
So wait a second. You put it in front of the radiator?
Yeah, so you don't get airflow through the radiator.
And so how does it start up? Well, how do you get the car to start?
I mean, starting could be anything. But usually in cold weather, you want to make the engine run a little warmer.
So, but if the car's not running, how do you heat up the... How do you make
it? If the car's not running, that's if it's not starting at all, it's not cranking, that's probably... As the temps go down, the batteries...
So,
like, a weak now, battery is going to run much worse in cold than it will in...
So you want to block that to keep the engine running warm? Is that it?
Yeah, you don't want to block it entirely, but you don't want the radiator to be running as efficiently.
For what purpose would you do that? I mean, so when you just start the car in the morning, is that it, or?
No, you kind of want to, that's as you're taking short trips around.
Really?
Yeah.
So should I be doing that?
It's only if, like, you're not changing your oil to a thicker oil for the winter, or, sorry, to a thinner oil for the winter.
What's the thinner
like
oil? What is the thinner oil? W30 or W40?
W30 or W20 would be thinner.
So I want to do W30 or W20 in the winter?
I mean, it should say in your manual. Excuse me, in your manual?
Dude, I don't read my manual. Why would I read my manual when I can just ask you?
I'll look into it.
Well, I should do W30, right, as opposed to W40.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
And then W40 in the summer.
Sure, yeah.
Jesus, I had no idea. You know what? Honestly, seriously, we should do, like, we're going to do another segment. You're going to answer questions.
Okay.
On cars. I'm not kidding.
I think the market on that's already cornered.
Hey.
Those guys are not fun to listen to. I'm sorry.
Really? I actually like listening to
Click and Clack. Yeah.
Well, of course you do, because you're a car guy. I actually like it too. But, you know, you could answer computer questions and
Evan's Corner.
I'm not kidding. That may be a bonus for that would be a huge bonus. You'd have to almost pay like you. I'll tell you what, folks. Become a cedar. You get.
I just become French, I think.
Yeah, come. We do not have a French member or a super Marxist member, or a cedar member. I'm embarrassed to say, folks. We do have three or four professional leftists. We just got a new dirty effing hippie. I think we have two dirty effing hippies and like three professional leftists. I'm not sure.
Something like that. Yeah, it's getting good.
And a lot of cedaristas. Let's see. It's so damn cold in 2000. Okay. Yay for... And I'm not going to read that part, Nefer. That was one of my guesses, but wasn't going to say so since you didn't want to read it on air by mistake. You'll be an excellent part. An asset to... Okay. Todd Slater, about that derivatives committee that voted to exclude phrases like Wall Street and shadow banking from the report, maybe they could issue a report in charades form. They could use lots of rhymes. Rhymes with rhymes with Maddow tanking instead of shadow banking. Rhymes with small feet as opposed to Wall Street. Very well done, Todd Slater. AOL System Managed Message. Listen to me. I understand that I have signed in from another location. I understand that the screen name is signed in three locations. I don't want to sign off. Kenny Mack, referencing yesterday's theocratic equivalency comparison, here's an interesting article showing despite the Catholic priest scandal being 10 years old, of the 5,768 priests defrocked over the years, there's no master list. No one knows where most of them are, including their victims, parishioners, or lawyers. I will look at that. I, you know, There's other people out there who do better with a war on religion, and you know, I want to respect other people's religion. Do I think there's something wrong with that system? You know, I don't know. I don't know what would be a better indication that there's something wrong with the system that they've got going over there. I mean, short of, I guess, like mass suicide. Chris, like, that guy is, like, funny. Like, wow, like, really, real, like, funny. I think the nuance in your analysis of Manning is right on the money, says Sugar High. But has the law since Daniel Ellsberg leaked... higher-level classified documents and was not convicted of, if anything, I thought there were new legal protections for whistleblowers. Even if Manny is in violation of the law, I think we need to support him publicly at a time when we see egregious lawlessness from powerful elite in this country. Manning is just another example of our two-tier justice system, to which Manning and WikiLeaks dealt the biggest blow in years. Has the law changed? You know, I don't know. No problem. What happened exactly with Ellsberg? And I don't know, frankly, if Manning falls under the jurisdiction of the technical definition of whistleblower. And I would also add that one of the things that makes it less analogous from a legal standpoint is Manning's status as a member of the U.S. military, whereas Ellsberg was not. He was a contractor. So, and I would add, I don't know what the timing is, but if Mike Gravel, you know, may have complicated things for conviction of Ellsberg. But be that as it may, look, we're a nation of laws. We're a nation of laws, and I think you're right. We can support him. I don't know if it's a question of whether or not he should be not be charged. He broke his oath. He broke, but perhaps there's things that people can organize and do outside to make. I don't know. It depends on what, I guess, what his punishment ultimately ends up be. But to make, you know, to try and in some way make the sacrifice that he's made easier on him. I'm not thinking of anything in specific. I'm responding in the moment, and I think we need to wait and see. But that's a good question. I got to look more into what happened with Ellsberg. Is Bradley Manning being held by the same people who made Jose Padillo crazy? There's a track record of these people's methods. Well, you know, the first thing that I read when I read this Manning thing was I remembered that image. I just, a vivid image of Jose Padilla being walked into court. Now, of course, Jose Padilla was held as a, what's that new, enemy combatant. Because he had a plot to blow up his building by turning the gas on in his oven, in his apartment or something. The picture of Jose Padilla going into the courtroom, jumpsuit, shackles behind his back, down to his legs. This is not a violent man. Black, sort of, not sunglasses, but like a, basically a blindfold. You know, the industrial size ear protectors so that he could hear and see nothing. What the fuck? Seriously. This is the type of shit that they don't even go to this extreme when they go and, you know, in the movies it drop you off to meet the Hamas leader who's underground. I mean, what the fuck? You know, if it's Lex Luthor, if you've captured some alien and you're afraid that they're going to attack you with their X-ray, you know, hearing or whatever it is that they have, laser beams that come out of their nostrils. If it's Hannibal Lecter or whatever that guy's name was. But Jesus, this is not how civilized human beings act. Isn't that supposed to be the difference? It's the way you treat your prisoners and your animals is the measure of how civilized the society is? It's just shocking. We're living in a very fucked up period of American history in many different ways. I need some of this here. Can you please turn on my computer? Bunch of kids. It's a great YouTube. We should show it. And the parents and the... Don't worry, I haven't forgotten about Goathead Soup or whatever the name of that song is, the Yodelay Hoo Hoo. I'm going to need boats. I'm going to need to lean on both these things. I may have to bring my fucking light box in here. Seasonal affective disorder. I'm getting America defected.
Put some full spectrum bulbs in the apartment.
We may bring the light box in here anyways, just to do some video shooting. But, I mean, I figure it's a twofer. 50-state ballot question drive for publicly financed campaign, says CC. They probably wouldn't let Manning exercise it because you mentally beneficial for and exhibited it on Law and Order SUV. Right. Well, yeah, they're trying to break him down mentally. The Georgia strike is not even being shown here in Georgia, says David Rodriguez. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. Reverend Jay, I'm surprised there aren't more protests in Georgia. Prisoners are stealing our jobs, our crappy, crappy jobs. By the way, legalize it. As I've been taught, Ellsberg should have gone to jail, but for procedural errors in the prosecution. Okay, fair enough. That's what my understanding is, but I wanted to just double check that. Crystal Khan, if what we know about Manning's treatment is true, I suspect the goal is to exact the worst possible punishment independent of legal outcomes. That's setting a new precedent for whistleblowers in the future. The law will not protect you because we will get you first. Next question, how high up are orders for his treatment come from? Do we have actual proof of Dick Cheney's privileges were ever taken away? Yeah, good. Good point. Vipervisor, fine to have log cabin GOP on MSNBC, but the whole story should be told. Rachel isn't innately aggressive, abrasive, and obnoxious as you, but made the point. Behold what's supposed to be a gay rights movement siding against Congressman Patrick Murphy. It's astonishing. Right. Right. Well, understand that, like, look, and, you know, I should tell people that, because this probably will come up in the future, that, you know, when I go on someone's show, when I go on to sub for someone, when I go on as a guest, I have more leeway than I certainly would as a sub. And, you know, it's a determination I have to make in terms of, you know, how far from how I would do a certain segment or cover a certain story. Am I willing to travel for the opportunity to promote this show, to make it economically viable for me to do this show, to build my brand in such a way that I can carry other messages? I mean, look, I dedicated 40 pages in FUBAR to shitting on the premise of log cabin Republicans and closeted Republicans. And in that moment, yes, I mean, if it was my show, would I have a log cabin Republican on there? I don't know. Maybe I could see the value in it. It's to isolate the Republican. I could see the political value in it. It's to isolate the Republican intransigence against this. It's also to, you know, say to other log cabin Republicans, like, man, really? Look at just look how much they hate you. In the RNC DVD that we're sending out in lieu of mugs to many people, because they have been wise enough to choose that option, I have, there's a really... Hi, hey, you know, I do a show every day. Well, it's 101. It's running a little bit late. Yeah, I'm still doing it. It's Nikki, everybody. Hold on. You want to say hi?
Tell me when to say hi. Hi, everybody.
Okay, there you go. Everybody, my IMs just exploded. Everybody just said hi. Okay. All right. All right. Well, I don't know if you want to. I don't know if you want to broadcast that you're looking for contraband, sweetheart. Hey, go by and check out that the Canal Plastics and see if they have those plastic. Get some plastic samples. All right. Well, let me call you back in like 10 minutes when I'm off. This is rude. Okay, bye. Well, at least she knew that it ended at one. I can't remember my point now, but I can see the efficacy to it. I probably, in the course of doing TV like that, will do stuff that I wouldn't necessarily do. Well, first of all, I also think that there's value in doing different things in different mediums, in different platforms. Frankly, a lot of the stuff that I do in the way I do it on this program would not work even on radio. One of the things I like about this medium, and I think I said this the other day, there's a lot of people who listen to this program, but the beauty is that I can actually have a conversation with people who are pretty well, pretty knowledgeable. And so I don't have to necessarily dumb down a lot of the stuff I'm talking about, which is nice. I don't mean to say that I dumb down stuff when I'm on radio or on TV, but, you don't know where everybody's at. Upbeat Nihilist, is anyone helping you with fundraising? I'm sure a lot of the Cedaristas would be interested in getting involved, including myself, probably a few good fundraisers in the group. Got to keep you on air, and those dollar lunches don't pay for themselves. I'm not sure what you mean by fundraising. I have a PowerPoint.
I think we may have just said yes indirectly.
Send an email to majority reporters. I mean, frankly, the way I've been trying to fundraise at this point is try and figure out like other jobs I can do to supplement. And that's going fairly well. Any chance we're going to see more of you subbing for MSNBC? It would be awesome if you get a show there. Rusty Cole says, tell Nikki hi. People should tune into the program tomorrow. Don't be a putz. Michelle Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow, covers a lot of ground about the prison industrial complex. Anybody keeping a master list of guests? No.
That stack of post-its is my master list.
Stack
guests.
Of post-its, right?
That's past guests.
I have another stack of post-its over here.
One additional angle she exposes, prisons are often built in wealthy neighborhoods. The prison population is counted for the purposes of public funding and local representatives, even though the prisoners, of course, can't vote. Oh, my gosh. Interesting. Very interesting. That's interesting.
That's terrifying, actually.
Yeah. Kevin 70: great interview. I saw Kilstein middle for Chris Hardwick this summer. The audience had no idea they had gotten themselves into. I'm going to go out on a limb and guess you've been tapped by the White House to be assistant to John Bon Jovi. Am I right? I won't. You'll never hear it from me. Hi, Sam. Drabnadefis. I was interested to hear from you the other day about the selling out of Melanie Sloan. Is it just me or is it really depressing? I remember hearing Al Franken sing to her about how she's standing up for justice and transparency. Now she's going to work for Lanny Davis, a guy who runs cover for Latin American coups. My faith in humanity is dwindling. Did Al sing to Melanie Sloan? I know he did to Christy Harvey. Well, what are you going to do? On the upside, Al's more more liberal, I think, than he was at that time. So, you know, people shift in different directions. Hi, Johnny. Hey, Sam. America Blog posting a CNN debate with Bob Knight on the war and Christmas last night. Pretty funny stuff. Darn it, they beat us! That's all right. We're going to use it. We're going to put it out on a podcast. We'll do it. Spay F, your guests were asking what can we do to beat the corporate influence. Seems like the only hope in this long shot. We need to get more progressives to show up at Democratic meetings where agendas are decided, yes, and we need to also enough progressives to figure out how to play the money game well enough to beat them at their own game. That's the hardest part because it's against our nature. Sevre, instant runoff voting would go great with campaign finance reform, yes. That girl sounded exactly like Sarah Palin. She could do a great impression. Must be talking about. Could be used in lieu of total overhaul. It's a system that allows for viable third-party candidates without fucking up the primaries, which would go great with email or snail mail voting. That's my 1-2-3 punch prescription. Instant runoff voting. First use was a success. I'll take a look at that. Maybe Manning can be pardoned under the Bush Scooter Libby has suffered enough standards. Similar crimes, no? Sevray, yes, absolutely. Trip, here's a link to the NPR story I heard this AM that might help you. Something we organize your Stacko notes. Software that makes life living easier. Oh, excellent. Harold, hi, Nikki. Taurusy. White House said White House badly wants START done before senators go home for the holidays as much as Obama wants don't ask, don't repeal. It seems clear that START is a higher priority. Aides believe this is why Reid keeps saying that START must go first and why he won't say outright that a vote on DAT. You know, folks, I don't do this that often. But that's what I fucking said on Olbermann a week and a half ago. It didn't make sense to me. When Joe Lieberman comes out and says, we can got time, just extend the calendar, then I know something's wrong. If Joe Lieberman and I, if Joe Lieberman is actively pursuing something that I think is good, there's something wrong. There's something wrong. Maybe I'm sick. Maybe I've contracted something. Maybe I've got worms. I've got a parasitic disease that is eating away at my flesh. Or Joe Lieberman is full of shit. So far, I'm extremely healthy. Democracy Now! Had a segment on the prison strike a couple of days ago. Let me tell you something about the difference between the Democracy Now! Budget and our budget.
It's a lot of zeros.
I mean, they're a big operation. Yeah. They deserve it. I'm glad they have tons of money. They have, I don't think you could physically fit all of their employees in this room.
No, they did fundraising.
Not sit down and, no, I mean.
Yeah.
But they're on everywhere. And she's been doing this for what now? 10, 20 years? 15 years?
Something like that.
10 years at least. Daddy says, Zing, help. My kids' winter school break begins tomorrow, and I'm sure they'll be using the computer when I usually be listening to Majority FM. Please send an email to me and other members who can't tune in what your news is. Well, get podcast. Do you not have a...
You can still schedule it to download through iTunes or something and then just listen to it at your leisure.
Right, or put it on a podcast machine or buy an internet radio. You know, when I was first thinking about the show, one of the ideas I had was to find a very cheap maker of internet radios. The cheapest one I've found is like $65. Find a really, really cheap one, though. and then give it as a gift to members. You know, because then you can listen to the show without even turning on your computer. But then it was like, well, if I get any cheaper, it's just they can't find them. And then it was, guys from Citizen Radio are awesome. Thanks for having them on. I can't wait for you to start taking callers, not the conservative ones, but folks like me. I'll tell you a little something about Reefer Madness, says Jimmy Reefer Cake. Hi, Johnny. By the way, are you and the family excited for Eat Chinese and Go to the Movies Day? Doesn't work that way. Nikki's family is Christian. And so we go to Michigan for Christmas. Do I sound not exciting? Hi, Johnny says, oh, man, lo siento. Say, yeah. Gracias. I did not see the video, but I did hear Peter DeFazio saying that Obama is saying that he needs this tax cut to save his presidency. White House is denying it said anything to that effect. A couple more. Okay, folks, I'm going to say goodbye. Went over by 10 minutes today. Apologies. Tomorrow on the program, well, I'm not going to tell you who the guest is. If you know who the guest is, you may find out what my secret is, what my little thing that I'm going to tell you about tomorrow is. And I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to say what it is. Tune in tomorrow, folks. Got some news to tell you, and of course, more show. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the Mets are gonna kick it.